principal in the state, and he had a lot of interest in the drama, and he would bring plays to the state drama festival, which was held at Shaw. And when I was a student at Shaw, I used to cut classes sometimes to go to the to go in and sneak in and see the plays, the drama festival. So I knew who Mr. Blake was. He was principal of West Charlotte High School. So but Hetherington hounded me until I wrote the letter of application to get Hetherington off my back. And he mailed the letter. Well, I never thought I'd hear anything more about that letter. Didn't even expect to. So at that time, I was going to summer school at the University of Michigan, working on my master's degree. So when I went to Michigan that summer, I in one of my classes, there was a young man from Greensboro who taught down in eastern North Carolina someplace. And he was asking me if I knew if there were any vacancies at Jordan Sellers School in Burlington, where I was teaching. So I told him no. I said there were no vacancies that I knew of. And he taught English just like I did, you know. So in about the second or third week that I was in Ann Arbor, I got my mother forwarded me a letter from Mr. Blake offering me a job as teacher. So I told this young man I didn't know whether there would be a vacancy in the Burlington or not, because you see it was the 30 days that you had to resign, you know, if you were going to had passed. So I had no idea I could get released. But so we decided, he and I, he was an English teacher. He wanted the job, and he was an English teacher. I wanted release, and I was an English teacher. So he was going to write a job to the, write a letter to the superintendent, a letter of application for an English job. And I, at the same time, was going to write a letter to the superintendent asking to be released. And we did that, and it worked. And that is how I came to Charlotte in September of 1944. And I've been here ever since. I taught at West Charlotte High School. And I taught English. And for the first time in my teaching career, which at that time was, I was in Rutherfordton 1 year, I was in Wake Forest 6 years, and in Burlington 1 year. That's what, that's 8 years. First time in 8 years that I did not have any extra duties. I taught English. I taught junior and senior English. But the second year I was there, Mr. Blake found out that I was interested in drama. And he assigned me the drama club. And on the third year I was there, I had the drama club. No, I didn't have a drama club. Then I had student council. Somebody else had drama, and I had student council. But I worked at West Charlotte High School for 15 years. And I enjoyed my work. I really did. I enjoyed my work. Well, I worked at West Charlotte, we were down here on a, I'm sorry, you're not from Charlotte, so you don't know what I'm talking about. Well, you remember the school that you passed on the way up to, well, that was where I taught. That it's a middle school now, but that was West Charlotte High School then. And let's see, we had been there, I've forgotten how many years. Anyway, they built a new school that was up on the other side of where you were last night. Mm-hmm. And I was still there. When we moved to the new school, I was still there teaching English. I taught English, and I was the advisor to the senior class. Mm-hmm. Well, after a few years, I just don't remember the dates. But in the meanwhile, there were this side of town was growing. This community began to to grow up. This when I came to Charlotte, there was nothing here. This was just undeveloped land. But Dr. McCrory, who was at that time president of Johnson C. Smith, owned most of the property, and he began to sell the lots, and people began to build. And there were other places in the area where people began to build houses, and the younger people began to move into this area. Well, the elementary school was up on Batesford Road, it's where you you turned into Patton Avenue.
Yes.
The expressway that you see that you came over, was a place where there was a school. As the children began to the families began to increase, the school began to get very, very crowded, and it got so crowded that they had to put the kids on double sessions. Well, after a couple of years, parents got tired of that, so they went to the board and said that they told them they wanted a school, because another school in the area, because they got tired of their kids being on double sessions. So the board told them that if they could find the land, they would build a school. So they found the land up off of Batesford Road, and the school board built a school. Well, the superintendent called me to his office, and I wondered what on earth he wanted. I said, because the superintendent called a teacher to his office. But I went down to see what he wanted. And he told me that a delegation of parents whose children were to be assigned to that school wanted me to be the principal of it. Well, I just couldn't believe it. Now, I was a high school English teacher. I didn't know anything about a elementary school, and I told him. So he said, "Well, you're not being asked to teach first grade. You're being asked to be the principal." And so you think about it. And I'm sure you have friends who are in the principalship who have been high school teachers, and say you find somebody who has had that experience and see what they say, and you think about it. So now, in the meantime, the school was just being built then, you know, it was under construction. So I did have some friends some college friends who were elementary principals and who had been high school teachers, and I got in touch with few of them, and they encouraged me, you know. But the person who really convinced me was the man whose name's on that list, Dr. Durant, Dr. Spencer Durant. And he was here then, and he was principal of Second Ward High School. And he told
married your childhood friend.
Yes, they were college sweethearts. So, and he told me essentially the same thing that Dr. Garinger had told me. He said principalship is a leadership position, and you have your job as a principal is to see to it that there is a climate where teachers can teach and students can learn. And so you can learn everything you want about elementary school teaching by visiting classrooms, and you have taught English, and you know what good teaching is. And you know good teaching when you see it. And he said, you won't have any problem of being an elementary school principal. Well, I took the job, and I had to become certified. So I started in the summer going to University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. And that they were still in the that was 1958. And schools were still segregated, but the university was just opening. And Rosalia Durant and I went to the university that summer, and we were the first black students to go to the summer school at the University of North Carolina. At Chapel Hill. We were the first, and of course, after that, there were many, 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 but we, that first summer, we were the first. And it was interesting. We had, applying for housing, learned with it from the literature they sent us that we could get a room that had it was a sort of a suite. It was a large room, and it had its own private bath. So we applied for that and got it. So I never forget the Sunday afternoon that we drove down there, and we showed up at Kenan Hall. And when we went in to check in, the person who was on duty, we identified ourselves, and she checked us in. She said, "Well, let me tell you something." She said, "We will never integrate the schools as long as you choose not to, assimilate with other people." He said, "I know why you asked for the room that you asked for, and you had it, but that's not the way that we're going to learn to live together."
And how did you respond to that, Dr.?
Well, we didn't respond. We went to our room with our private bath. But we understood what she was trying to tell us. But we found that it wasn't so bad we weren't using the bathrooms at the end of the hall. We had our own, and we enjoyed that. But in classes, well, we were just like any other student. We did not have any unpleasant experiences that summer at Chapel Hill. Never did. The only thing that ever happened, and I went 4 summers. Mrs. Duron and her husband, and they'll tell you if you ever get a chance to interview them, if they let you. They went to Nigeria the next year, and he went on a special mission for the State Department. Developing a college there in Nigeria, and so they were there for 4 or 5 years. I visited them while they were over there. Well, anyway, it took me three summers and going on Saturdays to get my certificate, my credentials for the to be a principal, and I did, and so the next year, the next 2 summers that I went there, I had a single room, but it didn't have a bathroom, and I had to use the bathrooms at each end of the hall like everybody else did. It was no problem at all. I enjoyed that, and I got my my principal certification, and. They had a little ceremony, a little graduation ceremony that third year that I went. And see, I not only went during the summer, I went every Saturday. So it didn't take me that long to get the certification. So I remember the Dr. Otts, who was the person who was in charge of the teacher education department, when I had to go to his office for something, and so he asked me if I realized that I was going to be the first black student to receive that certification from the School of Education. I said, "No." I said, "How would I know that?" He said, "But you are." So I said, "Well, I hope there will be others." He said, "Oh, yes." He said, "There are others taking that night." He said, "But I just thought you'd be interested to know that you were the first." So I was principal at University Park School, opened it, brand new school.
What's the name of the school, I'm sorry?
University Park.
Oh, I see.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And right now, it is, it's not an elementary school. It was closed as an elementary school about 4 or 5 years ago. And it has a discipline school in part of it, and then it has some State Department offices and some local offices. But they are all those things are going to be moved and changed, and they are opening it again in September as an elementary school. It's going to be one of the magnet schools, And I'm just so glad, because I just hated it so much when they closed it. But I was there for 9 years, and I enjoyed it so much. I never did think that I would enjoy the thing more than I enjoyed teaching. But I enjoyed those 9 years, and I hated to leave. I really did. It's really the best job in education. You have children at the time of their lives when they are most eager to learn. And you have parents who are most cooperative, and you have teachers who teach the child and not the book. And I did enjoy it, and we just did a lot of interesting things at that school. But in the late 50s, let me see, it was 50, no, it was not late 50s, late 60s, 60, what? 58. I was there 9 years. What would that be?
1967.
The superintendent called me to the office again and told me that. That was the year that during that time, Lyndon Johnson was president, and there were, Head Start starting, Title I funds for disadvantaged children. And our school system had applied for some of the Title I money, and he wanted to, see, the state didn't have kindergarten at that time, and he wanted to use that money to develop some kindergarten programs. And he told me he wanted me to be the coordinator. Oh. So I left my University Park Elementary School kicking and screaming, because I surely did not want to leave it. But I went to central office, and I did that. And I was in central office. I had that job for two or three years, and then another superintendent. I was I was in charge of school operations, administrative assistant for school operations. Then I had a charge of several schools in the school system. For instance, I had a West Charlotte High School and all the schools whose children fed into West Charlotte High School. And I had that job for about 3 years, and then under another superintendent, Dr. Robinson, I was promoted to the job I had when I retired, which was associate superintendent for program services, and I had charge of student services and curriculum. And I retired in 1982. I had been teaching since 1936 when I graduated from college, but I had been at West Charlotte since 1944, when I came here. But I had a total of 48 years, I think, in the teaching profession.
Mm-hmm. A long time. Seen a lot.
But I enjoyed every bit of it. I enjoyed it. And I had never, I was talking about being surprised when I was asked to be a principal. I was certainly surprised when I was brought to central office. Now, there was one black person at the central office when I went there. And he was the person who was in charge of federal programs. And I worked with federal funding for kindergartens, and I worked under him. He was my boss. Now, he was the first person who had the titles of assistant superintendent. Mm-hmm. And I brought a copy of my resume over here for you. And you can, if you're interested in those years, they are in that. But I was really surprised when I was made an assistant superintendent. And then an associate superintendent, dear me. It was never anything that I ever even aspired to, and certainly never thought that black people would be hired for jobs like that. But that was just the beginning, just the beginning.
And Dr. Anoff, when you were called to be the principal of University Park School, was your mother still living at that time then?
Oh, yeah.
And mm-hmm. what was her reaction?
Oh, she loved it. In fact, you didn't ask me about my marriage.
I wanted to get to that.
But I was married, and my mother had come to live, with us. Mm-hmm. At that time, we wanted her to come live with us when we first got married. But she didn't want to. She didn't want to leave Raleigh. She that was her home, and she had all of her involvements. She not only did she have her church involvement, she still sang in the choir. She taught Sunday school. She belonged to the lodges. She belonged to the household of Ruth and the Eastern Star. And she just had all of her involvement. But my husband told her that he said, when you get ready to come, and when you start, when you're tired of living by yourself, so you just pick up the telephone, and we will come and get you. And when she did call, we knew that she wasn't coming because she wanted to. We felt that the neighborhood was changing, and we believed that something frightened her. Now she never said so, but we believed that she was why she came, because the neighborhood was just changing, and it wasn't like it was when we grew up in it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, different kinds of people living in it. You know, people I know. I remember, and that was after she had come with us. There's somebody, a friend of mine who lived near that, was asking me if Mama told us about the break-ins that had occurred in the neighborhood, and I said no. I said she wouldn't tell us that. I said, but I'm glad you told me, because I said, we thought that something had happened. Now she didn't, I don't think she ever had a break-in. I think she would have told us that. But I think that she became uneasy about living there in the neighborhood.
So if I could ask you about your marriage now.
All right.
So when was it that you married?
When did I marry? I married on June the 10th, 1950. I married at First Baptist Church in Raleigh, church where I grew up, where I played for the Sunday school and the church, and where I went to WIC circles and all those other good things. Well, I met my husband on a blind date. I was introduced to him by a friend of mine who taught with me in Wake Forest. And I was here in Charlotte teaching, but she and I kept up a correspondence. So she called me on telephone one day and told me, she said, I've got a man I want you to meet. Really? Uh-huh. Yeah, I want you to meet him. And she told me, his name is John Randolph. See, he lives in Rochester, New York, and he is a widow. And he's been a widow about 3 years. And said, I think he wants to get married again, and it's time you got married. So, because I had had boyfriends and dates growing up and all like that, but I had never got to the marrying point. So, now here I'm in Charlotte, and he is in Rochester, New York. So I said, well, how are we going to get together? She said, well, he's willing to come to Charlotte. So I thought about it, you know, and I said, well, so what? I said, it's going to be an interesting experience. So I told her, yes, to tell him to, I gave him my address and telephone number and all. And so he wrote me, told me he'd like very much to come to Charlotte and meet me. So I wrote him back and told him, okay. And he came. At that time, there was a hotel the Alexander Hotel, which is the only black hotel in Charlotte. You've heard about the Alexander Hotel. Well, that's where he stayed, at the Alexander Hotel. And of course, I stayed where I was, up here on Bakersfield Road, where I was rooming. And he would come, and the lady who I was living with liked him very much. He was very, very nice, personable. I have to get his picture and show him to him. So he stayed, I think he stayed a week. And we would have dinner, you know, after school, he'd come pick me up and take me to the hotel. And then sometimes my landlady, you know, would insist that he stay and have dinner with us. But everybody he met, all my friends that he met, liked him, you know. Now he was at least 10 years older than I. But he was a widow, he had no children. And he lived in Rochester, New York, as I told him. Well, after he went back, you know, we still corresponded and everything. And he wanted to meet my family. So I always went home to Raleigh for Christmas and for Thanksgiving, too, all holidays. So I had told Mama about him. And my father had died, by the way, by that time. Mm-hmm. My father died the year that I was a senior in high school. Well, Mama said, and Mama had remarried by the time I met John. So she said, why don't you bring him, invite him to come and visit at Christmas time? Said, we can get him a room at the hotel, at the Sir Walter Hotel, that was the black hotel in Raleigh. So that happened. I told him that my family would be like very much to meet him. And he came down and he stayed for the Christmas holidays and the family like that. And my mama told me, I'd never forget, she said, you don't have sense enough to marry that man. She said, you don't have sense enough to marry him. Oh, so, I took my time. I didn't rush. But it was a long distance courtship.
How long did you court over a long distance,
Dr. Randall? Well, not very long. Mm-hmm. Not very long. Let's see. We married in 1950. And let's see. It must have been 48. Uh-huh. Probably 48. Uh-huh. And I had a church wedding in First Baptist Church. And well, he wanted me to come to Rochester, and I didn't know whether I wanted to go to Rochester or not. But when we married, you know, we spent our honeymoon in New York City, and we went, and that's where we went. And we married in the summertime. You see, we married in June, and I did not resign my job. Because I didn't know what was going to be available up in Rochester, New York. Well, I found out that there was not anything available in the school system in Rochester. There was one black school teacher in the Rochester, New York school system. One. So, but I had a library science credentials. I didn't tell you that. When I was working at Wake Forest, I went to. I took some library science courses over at North Carolina Central, and I had a library credentials. So I said, "Well, I said if they don't have any teaching jobs, maybe I could get a job in the library." So I went to the main library and talked to the director, and he had a job open, but you know he asked me some questions about. I wanted to know why I wanted to leave Charlotte. I said, "Well, I'm married to a man who lives here, and he wants me to come here to live." And I said, "I'm used to working," and I said, "I'm not going to come unless I can find a job." So he gave me an application and told me to fill it out, and I filled it out. And there was one item on there where I had to. Give something about my employment history. And one question I had to answer was what my salary was at my last job. Well, that was the straw that broke the camel's back, as my mother used to say. When he saw that, he called me and he told me that he could not offer me the job. I asked him why. So he said, "You make more money than I make." I will never forget that. I will never forget that. So I told my husband, I said, John, I said, I am going back to my job. I am going back to my job. And I was still teaching then. So we started out with a long distance marriage. Mm-hmm. So I would go to Rochester in the summer, and I would go to Rochester at Christmas time. But I'd come back to my job. Well, John got tired of the long distance marriage, and he told me that to help him make some contacts and locate get a job here. He said he didn't mind moving to Charlotte, and that's what happened. He got a job as he was manager of one of the housing projects. He has had charge of all of the maintenance and all of the houses in this housing project, Double Oaks Housing Project. So he came down to Charlotte, and we lived in an apartment first, over in Double Oaks. That was the apartment complex where he was working. And during that time, we saved the money, and we built this house. And we moved into this house the year that, in 1958. And that was the year that I got the principalship. And the year that Mama came to live with us. But she came to live with us before we moved into the house. House was under construction. But she came to live with us, and we just, in fact, I never forget, she made that telephone call, you know, and John said, well, Mother, she said, you want me to come down and get you? So she said, no, I'll come on the bus. And I never will forget, we met her at the bus station. And she stayed with us until, in fact, he died before she did. He died in 58, and he died.
58?
He died at the, when it, what was the year that Kennedy died? Wasn't that in the 50s? 63. Yes, he died the week after John F. Kennedy died. And she died in 67.
How, just to a point about your long distance marriage, mm-hmm. how long did that go on for?
Oh, that didn't go on 2 years.
I wouldn't think so.
No. No, I think I spent 2 summers and 2 Christmases in Rochester. And I knew, it's too cold up there anyway, I don't think of it. Mm-hmm. But,
and did you have any children?
No children. He had no children from his first. I told you he was a widower, but he had no children, and we had no children in our marriage. Mm-hmm.
So, you're Dr. Randolph.
No. Now that is an honorary degree. I have 2 honorary degrees. Mm-hmm. And I do not like to be called doctor. People insist on doing that, but I do not like. No, I got my master's at the University of Michigan, and my administrative credentials at the University of North Carolina. But the doctors that I have are honorary. From the first from Charlotte University, my alma mater, and then the other one that I got just a year before last at University of North Carolina Chapel at Charlotte.
Oh. Quite an honor. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure you deserve it.
Well, when you look at that Vita, you'll see why I got it.
Mm-hmm. I look forward to that. Now, I'm trying to think of what I might have left out asking you about. When you were a principal, did conflicts come up between teachers or different administrators? I guess the question would be, how did you handle any conflict that might have arisen as the principal at the mm-hmm. head of the school?
Well, one thing about it, I didn't, my administrative style was not to be a boss. My faculty and I were a team, and our job was to teach children, to give them the best education possible. And we were a team, and we worked together to make our school the best school in Charlotte. There's only one thing that I remember, one problem that I ever had with a teacher, and that was not a very serious problem, although it was serious. I had he was a young man, and he was late for school one day, and school was, gosh, I guess it was about, he was supposed to be at school at 8 o'clock, say, and 9 o'clock came, he wasn't there, and he had not called, and he was living with, or rooming with a principal who had at one time taught with me, and I called her at her school, and I said, Evelyn, I said, John Hunter hadn't come to work. I said, is he sick, or is something wrong? He said, no, he's not sick. He said, he was still there. He hadn't left when I left for work. So if he's not at school, so he must be home asleep. Well, that's where he was, home asleep. Well, so I said, well, thanks a lot. And I didn't call him at all. But I did get a substitute. And when he came, I guess he got there about 10 o'clock. So I was so tickled the secretary came in. And I told me, I said, Miss Randolph, said, Mr. Hunter is here. So I said, really? So I went out into the office there. And I said, well, good morning, Mr. Hunter. How are you? You decided to come to school. I said, I was really beginning to think you were sick. I said, I called your landlady, and she told me you weren't sick, that you were there with. Well, Ms. Randall, I am just so embarrassed. I overslept. I just didn't wake up. I just woke up about a half hour ago. So I said, well, it seems to me that you need an alarm clock. Yes, ma'am, I guess I do. So he turned around like he was going. I said, well, now, Mr. Hunter said, you don't need to go to your class. I said, I don't. I said, no. I said, there's a substitute there teaching. Oh, wait, Miss Randolph. I said, now look, don't Miss Randolph me. I said, you come to school at 10 o'clock and you're supposed to be here at 8. And you expect to teach with it? I said, no, dear. I said, there's someone covering your class and she will be paid out of your salary. So I said, now what you need to do is go back home. And I said, because I would suggest that you go to the drugstore or someplace and buy an alarm clock before you go back home. But I said, that's what you need to do. I said, but I think that you need to finish your nap. Well, I'll have you know that John Hunter never was late again. And he is a principal now in Durham. And whenever he sees me, he has relatives here, and I see him sometimes, and whenever he sees me, you know, he'll come up and give me a hug, you know, and say, oh, you're the person who taught me how to be a principal. I said, no, I didn't. I just taught you how to get up on time. So we had a family relationship. I wish I had known you were coming. I had a picture of our first faculty at University Park School, but I gave it to Pat. And so if you ever go back up to the library and see her, tell her you would like to see the picture of University Park School that I left up there. But when the superintendent in charge of elementary education had something innovative he wanted to try, he would come to us and we would talk about it and see if anybody wanted to try it. And if somebody did, they tried it. We had a wonderful PTA. So many of the parents, they were parents I had taught at West Charlotte High School, you know, and they were very, very cooperative. So we had a good school. Yeah, a good school, good teacher-parent relationships, teacher-student relationships.
Was it mostly the mothers of the students who were involved with the school, or were the fathers?
Fathers were involved too. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And I have one more question to ask you about work. Sort of about work. You were single for several years. Mm-hmm. while you were working. Mm-hmm. Were there a lot of other single teachers? Mm-hmm. And did, since you didn't have families of your own, did mm-hmm. you do things together ever? Did you socialize?
Oh, uh-huh, yes, uh-huh. Mm-hmm. I don't have a picture. Pat has that too. That was a, yeah, Pat has that picture. There was a club that I still belong to. Some of us have gone on to our reward. The name of it was Les Savants. We called ourselves Les Savants, the wise ones. And it was a club of teachers. Mm-hmm. And it was a social club. We called it the Chat and Chew Club. Mm-hmm. And we still, those of us who, we have added members, you know, new people who have come to town. And if somebody somebody comes to town and belongs to joins your church or comes to teach, and somebody in the club will meet them, you know, say, so, you know, so, we have a young woman who is new in town or has joined our church, has come to teach, and said, I think that she would fit in with our club. Well, you'd first invite them as a visitor, and if everybody liked the person, we would invite them to join. Mm-hmm. And of course, I belong to my sorority, and I've been very active in my sorority on local, regional, and national level. And I'm still active in the chapter here, the alumni chapter here. I've been president of it. I've been regional director, South Atlantic regional director. I've been national parliamentarian of Alpha Kappa Alpha. Mm-hmm. And I belong to the Lynx. In fact, that's where I was today, last meeting of the year. And that's a group of professional women who do community work. And I belong to, I'm not a good bridge player. I belong to one bridge club. And that's a club when we have one good bridge player in it. And she teaches the rest of us, and we do more visiting and socializing than we do playing bridge. But we meet once a month. Mm-hmm.
And is that all women as well?
All men, all women. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And I belong to First Baptist Church. If no, you didn't come down to Oakland Avenue.
I saw First Baptist last night because we received an invitation to go there tomorrow morning.
Oh, you're gonna be in our church tomorrow.
Yes.
Well, all right. I'll look for you. Mm-hmm. Yes, well, that's where I belong. I joined that church. Of course, it was not that building. When I first came to Charlotte, I transferred my membership from First Baptist Raleigh to First Baptist Charlotte. And I have belonged to that church ever since I have been here.
Uh-huh. It's a lovely building now.
Uh-huh, it is. Uh-huh. Harvey Gant was the architect of that building.
Mm-hmm. I suppose that's your car outside that has the Gant for U.S. Senate bumper sticker.
That is my car.
Yeah. I heard you worked on his campaign.
Yes, I did. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yes, I did. Mm-hmm. Well, let me tell you some more about my family.
Yes, ma'am, please.
Mm-hmm. I told you there were six of us, mm-hmm. and there are three of us who are living. There were three boys and three girls. We lost the first member of our family when she was 14. She was still in high school. She died of pneumonia. And I went to Shaw. My brother, who was the second in the family, went to Shaw. He went to he joined the after he finished high school. My mother was see my father had died. I told you he died when I was a senior in high school, and. She couldn't send us to college, and because I was valedictorian of my class, and I got a scholarship for my first year in college. But that was the Roosevelt years, and there were jobs available and money available in this college. But my brother, I went to join another Roosevelt program, the CCC, Civilian Conservation Camp, a program that provided jobs, you know, for young men who wanted the jobs. But after he came back from the CCC, he went to Shaw and got his degree. My third brother went to join the Army, and he made a career of the Army. My sister went to Shaw. She was a little flirty girl, and she really didn't want to go to college, but Mama made her go. But when she finished high school, she went to did she go up to Baltimore first? No, she went to college. She didn't want to go, but Mama made her go. But when she finished college, that's when she went to Baltimore, and she worked for Social Security. And she said, now my youngest brother he was the youngest of the family, and all the rest of us were out working, you know, when he finished high school. So he was the only one who did not go to Shaw. He went to Morehouse in Atlanta, and I paid his way. I was living, I had come to Charlotte then, and I paid his tuition. And we all helped each other. When I was the first one out of school, and I would send my mother a portion of my salary every month. And when my brother worked in CCC, he did the same thing. So we always helped each other. So when he went to college, I helped him. When he went to came out of CCC and went to show, I helped him. Of course, I completely paid the expenses of my youngest brother and my sister to college. And we always always do that. We always helped each other. We're a very, very close family. The other two brothers who are deceased they've just died in both of them in the past 10 years. Mm-hmm. Now my brother who went to Shaw became a teacher, and he taught in Prince George's County, Maryland. My sister worked for Social Security, but then she got tired of Social Security and decided that she wanted to teach. So she went back to school and got her master's, and she taught in Annapolis, Maryland. Mm-hmm. And she's retired now. My youngest brother, who went to Morehouse, and he graduated from Morehouse, he graduated in chemistry, and he worked for the